Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Send Mum Club podcast, the parenting podcast with a difference. The difference being that it is all about parenting children with Send. So if you're new to the podcast, the reason that I set this up in the first place is because my son Leo, who is now just over three, has Down syndrome. And when Leo was born, I felt like the world had ended. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who to speak to. I thought that nothing would ever feel great again. And of course, now it does. But when I was listening to parenting podcasts, I was really interested in other people's stories, but I was desperate for something that looked or sounded like mine and something that resonated with me as the mum of a child with additional needs. And I struggled to find that, to be honest. So I thought, you know what? I'm a radio presenter. I'm a podcast producer. Why not set up my own podcast? So here we are. And you know what? We're kind of approaching a year of the Send Mum Club. So if you've been here since the beginning, I really appreciate you. And if you're new, then welcome along. So by the time this episode goes out, it'll be February. Thank goodness, because currently it is the end of January. I have about 3p in my bank. All my skincare's run out. I'm absolutely freezing. And it feels like January's gone on forever. But enough moaning, and let's move on to talk about this week's episode. Now, I recorded this at the end of last year. And although, yes, this podcast is called the Send Mum Club, and it is predominantly women that listen, I thought it might be nice to start getting some different types of guests on. So it will stay predominantly mums that I'm talking to. But this week, I have a man. It's a dad on. His name is Paul Triggs, and he's here to talk about his daughter, Violet. Now, Violet has autism, and I always think it's interesting to get a dad's perspective on things. We also talk about the positive effect that Violet's autism has had on her siblings, which is a really lovely thing to listen to Paul talk about. And he also talks about the fashion and footwear brand that he has set up and the changes that he's trying to make for not only Violet's future, but for other people with additional needs looking for paid employment. So this is a great chat. There's loads of interesting things that me and Paul talk about. So here it is. Paul, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, you're actually only the third ever man to make an appearance on this podcast. It's obviously called the Send Mum Club, but I thought it's actually nice to branch out a little bit and kind of get a dad's perspective on a lot of the things that I've spoken about with mums. So I'm delighted that you're here. You've got a busy household, haven't you?
Yeah, me and my partner and the four children. Soon to be five in April, so...
Oh, congratulations.
Pretty manic, but I don't think we'd have it any other way, to be honest.
I love that. Now, you're here predominantly to talk about your daughter, Violet, aren't you, who's eight?
Yes, eight. She was eight last Friday.
Will you just tell me a little bit about her?
Yeah, Violet, non-judgmental little girl. Sees the world differently from probably you and I. She has a great perspective on things, generally happy. Very sensory, so she's in tune with rain, weather, the outdoors, likes rolling around in the mud, loves a tablet, I think loves tunes and melodies. So, yeah, that mainly focuses on the sensory side that keeps Violet happy.
Violet has sensory processing disorder and autism, doesn't she?
Yeah, well, she's diagnosed with autism. I think going through different specialists, it was mentioned about sensory processing disorder. Very similar traits.
Will you just talk me through your journey to diagnosis? Was that an easy journey for you? And also, how quick was it? Because I know that for some people, it can be quite difficult and quite long.
Yeah, it wasn't an easy process at all. Quite laborious in trying to get to a diagnosis. If I go back to the start, when Violet was about 18 months, 2 years old, we noticed her speech wasn't developing. And it was like she regressed. So she was walking really early, 10, 11 months, and she was starting to say words. She was following simple instructions like clap hands, click your fingers and different little bits like that. At about 18 months, 2 years, we seen a regression in her and the speech didn't develop at the pace that we thought. But we weren't too worried because my son, who's 18 months older than Violet, he was a slow speaker, quite delayed. If you look at statistically when other people are stringing sentences together. So there was an initial concern, but not overly worried. And then as she joined nursery, the nursery highlighted how she was a little bit behind her peers. And we thought, okay, well, what can we do? And it was suggested a speech and language therapist. So we were put in touch with a speech and language therapist. A few parents in the school used, and they had previous experience with this speech and language. So we started with her. And we followed the general process, I think the assessment phase, to see where she was at. And then it was suggested then there may be a little bit more to it than just a delay in a speech and language. And that's where the sensory processing. Now, it wasn't a diagnosis, it was suggestion. So it was totally new to myself and my partner, Olivia. We didn't suspect anything like autism. We didn't suspect anything. We were quite open, but we wanted to sort of get to the bottom of it and find out a little bit more about how we could support Violet. We then searched the internet. We spoke to countless different people. We recommended an occupational therapist to make an assessment on Violet. And we know through the NHS it's quite a long process. We were in a privileged position where we could look private and start reaching out to different people if we could. And like I say, it was a bit of a needle in a haystack trying to find someone. Fortunately, Olivia's dad's partner, wife, she works on the cancer ward in Alderhay, and they have occupational therapists coming onto the ward and working with the children. And she got speaking to an OT at the time, Denise. And she said, do you do any private work or private referrals? And she said, I do. So we were put in touch with her. And then we started the journey with Denise, seeing her once a week through sessions and having an observation made. Now, with it being private, it wasn't a diagnosis. It was more a report built around her findings.
Can I just ask, Paul, because I don't know the answer to this. If you go private, can they not give a diagnosis?
At that time, I don't believe so. Don't quote me on that. But at that time, that was our understanding. Okay. That wasn't the diagnosis. It wasn't an official diagnosis. I don't know the reasons behind that. From what we were advised, it was they had to come through the NHS. So then we started on what's called the pathway then, in towards speaking to different specialists to make an assessment from Violet. The only downside was it was during COVID, so everything was elongated, everything was drawn out, and everything was over Teams. As you can imagine, Violet attention span at that time, at the age of 2, coming up to 2.5, she wouldn't entertain the tablet and be assessed over a video. So a lot of it was myself and Olivia both answering their questions, advising and giving feedback from what we've found with the use of our speech and language therapist, and our OTU was supplying information.
What age was Violet when you got the official diagnosis?
I think she was 4, because it was going into reception, 4 or 5. It was 5, about a 3-year process.
Wow. And that's with you, obviously, being able to go private. So I guess to speed things up and, like you said, I suppose over Teams, that very much changes how they can diagnose, doesn't it? But it must have helped you having those reports from speech and language in the OT, mustn't it?
Yeah, it did. It just basically confirmed what myself and Olivia were saying to the specialists. It held more weight, and especially when we had an EHC produced, which is basically a legal document that will stay with the child through their lifetime of being in education. Because Violet has a tendency to put things in her mouth, unedible items, and she needed one-to-one care in a nursery setting. So it was vitally important we cracked on and we got that EHCP, and that was recommended by the OT. Again, we were fortunate to add all the reports into it, and it was able to substantiate why she needed it. And why we needed to push on for a diagnosis. Because what we've always done is we've always looked into the future. The here and now we can deal with, but we want to see where she's going to go and get things set up and offer her a chance of progression.
It's interesting that you say that, because and I would include myself in this, and a lot of other people that I've spoken to are actually quite the opposite in terms of finding it quite difficult to look to the future and having to kind of stay present. But obviously the future's coming, isn't it?
Yeah, I might have a little bit of a different outlook on people. I can do everything for Violet now, but I'm not going to be around forever. So my sole goal is to give Violet an independent life where she'll have her siblings to support, and I think they'll always be there. I won't always be there, unfortunately. So if I can give her independence, that's the end goal. So I'm looking to the end goal rather than the here and now. I can deal with what's in front of us. So yeah, so with school, it was a case of, let's get the AHCP in place. Let's get the support mechanism in place. It's a legal document. These schools have then got to follow it. The local authority have got to follow it. And then we know she's in a better, safer place. And then it become all about the setting. Is she in the right setting? And at the time, the nursery she was in wasn't the right setting for Violet. As you'll be well aware, with a child with additional needs, comes a different set of skills, a different understanding. Every child's different. And not to taint the nursery in a bad light, because they were absolutely brilliant, but they just couldn't cater for Violet. So then we found a setting not too far away that already had children who were on a different diagnosis and had dealt with children with autism in the past, and we felt more comfortable at being in that environment. They were able to offer the one-to-one care which she needed at the time, and they were able to put strategies in place in order to support Violet.
When you got the diagnosis, or when you were leading up to thinking that she was going to get diagnosed with autism, did you have much knowledge of that or any experience with, you know, family or friends?
Not necessarily in the mould of how Violet is. But we've got family who were what used to be called on the spectrum. So there was a general understanding, but it was vague in terms of Violet and her needs. And Olivia's absolutely brilliant. She self-educated herself and went about finding the details out, finding about strategies to help regulate Violet. And she's educated myself. She's a bit like Superwoman, to be honest. So yeah, she was the driving force behind, and I've just tried to support along the way.
It's interesting. I saw somebody on Instagram the other week saying something along the lines, and I'm not going to say this right now, I'm paraphrasing, but something along the lines of that they wished that autism could be renamed, or that it could have a bit more detail, because it is such, I know that every child is different, but I think with autism especially, there's such a wide range of different characteristics and how it can present, isn't it? That one person with autism could be living a completely different life to somebody else in terms of how they were able to interact with other people or a setting that would be appropriate for them. How does it present in Violet?
So Violet isn't... It's not glaringly obvious, but if you spent a little bit of time observing her, you'd be able to see some of the traits that come out in her. So currently, Violet, in terms of regulating herself, will rock side to side. It used to be when she was a lot younger, she used to spin, and she'd spin like a ballet dancer, round and round, so she'd never get dizzy. And then it developed into trying to dampen down a sensory side when things were starting to overload, and she'd start a form of biting her hand to try and dampen it down. So she's gone through a bit of a journey in how she regulates herself. As she's getting older, I think she's understanding herself as a person. And you're 100% right, all autistic children are different, but all children are different. So I'm not shocked at all. Autistic children are different, because I've got four children and they all display different characteristics, and it's just the same in autism. It's what we deem probably as a little bit more unconventional. There are restraints in terms of her educational development, with Violet, she's non-verbal, so she doesn't talk. But I know she's got the ability to talk. It's just how we unlock it. It's how we put strategies in place. It's how we can support her to get to the stage where she is talking.
You mentioned that she had kind of started to speak and she did have some words. How difficult was that to see that regress, I suppose? Because I haven't experienced this, but I have spoken to other people who have. And I think sometimes it's almost harder to have had it and then it gone to the not to have had it at all. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, we were at the early stages. And if you look at reports, and it does show a regression in a lot of children. When we were at that stage, you just crack on and you think everything's fine and you just get on with day-to-day life. And then as it starts turning, you then start questioning. And you can play with your own mind, and then you start thinking, have we done something different? Has something changed in a diet? And then you start second-guessing yourself. And I suppose it's probably like that for a lot of parents. I don't dwell on things, though, and I don't think Olivia does. I think there's a problem there, or we can see a problem. How do we support it? How can we work? Fixing it's probably not the right terminology, but how can we support it? How can we give Violet the best? And that's, as a parent, I'd like to say the majority of parents want the best for the children. It's just a different circumstance and a set of rules that we're working towards.
Would you say that you and Olivia dealt with it in the same way when you initially got that diagnosis, in terms of your feelings and emotions about it?
Yeah, I think the diagnosis is a bit of a, you know it's coming. You know it's there, but it's still a kick in the stomach when you receive it. I'd be a liar if I didn't feel upset about it. I'm not one to show emotions. If you ask anyone who knows about me, I'm not that really emotional person. I probably get more frustrated than anything. But it was an emotional, it was sadness, but it didn't change anything. It's essentially a label. It's essentially a label for me that doesn't mean a great deal to me.
I know what you mean. I do feel like everybody, I would say to some extent, has to go through almost a grieving process. I know that we did. And I was lucky enough, me and my husband kind of labelled that really early on with Leo to go, okay, this is a form of grief of, you know, what we thought that things were going to look like. Now it's not. It's okay to feel really upset or frustrated or angry about that and then move on.
Yeah, but you wouldn't change it for the world now, because that person is that person. It is. It's difficult because you, like I refer back to, you want the best for your children. And probably at the time it feels like you're not giving them the best. But then as you come to realise and their character develops as they get older and you see traits in them, and you couldn't ask for a better person than Violet. She doesn't fight with her siblings. She doesn't want for anything. She might get frustrated when she doesn't stop eating our Violet. She's not your stereotypical autistic picky eater. She'll eat anything. She'll try anything. And that's been development. It wasn't always like that. So if you take her away from the biscuit cupboard, she might get a bit stroppy, but it's the only time. Yeah. She's the easiest one to look after. She's good as gold.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I feel like that about Leo. So I've got a 17-year-old and a 12-year-old. So I've been through this parenting journey with, you know, typical children. And so far, I would say that Leo, with his Down syndrome, is by far my easiest child, yeah. Like by an absolute mile. And I think if anybody's listening to this who has very recently got a diagnosis, I think you don't feel like that at the beginning. I don't know if you felt the same, Paul, but I was absolutely devastated and I would have done anything to change it. And you don't feel like that's ever going to change. And then it does. Like you said, you wouldn't change a thing. And I used to see people on social media saying there's actually a hashtag. I don't know if it's for everything else, but I know certainly for Down syndrome. And it's like, hashtag wouldn't change a thing. And I was like, why are you lying? Why are you saying that you wouldn't change it? And then you get there, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. At the time, if I could take the autistic label away from Violet and what I saw, because she's constantly seeking and her brain doesn't switch off. There's elements I'd take away, but I wouldn't take away the person that she is. If that makes sense.
Yeah, but the person that she is because of the autism, isn't it? And the person that Leo is because of his Down syndrome.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, like I say, if I could make things a little bit easier and life a little bit easier for her, the only changes I would make.
Yeah, 100%. There's a lovely saying I always come back to, and it's, I wouldn't change my child for the world, but I'd change the world for my child. And I really like that.
Yeah, 100%, because there's a lack of awareness and a lack of understanding, and it's not just in disabilities, it's in society. It's lack of integration, and it's small-mindedness. People cast judgments and aspersions based on little knowledge, and unfortunately, that's the sort of world we live in today.
Do you think it's changing?
I think awareness is improving. I think the more people talk about it, the more people like yourself who are putting podcasts together, and I've got a platform to deliver people's message on, I'm all for that because it gives people a better understanding. My friends and family probably don't know half the things that we have to go through on a daily basis to support Violet and the rest of the family unit. But things like this open people's eyes. And then I've had a lot of people approach me and friends of friends whose children are going through the same, and I've tried my best to offer guidance from my perspective. I'm no expert, but I can just give my advice from what we've been through, and you bounce off other people, and I think it's improved.
Yeah, I like to think so. Sometimes I think it hasn't, and with other things that are going on in the world, that kind of feeds into my fear that things aren't changing. But then I do see things moving forwards. And like you said, I think awareness now, well, how old's Violet? Eight. I think probably certainly since Violet was born, the conversations around neurodiversity or disabilities or additional needs are completely different to what they would have been eight, ten years ago.
Yeah, massively. If I think back to when I was in school and you're thinking, you're looking and you're assessing children you were in class with, they were undiagnosed. Some children were labelled as naughty, some children disruptive. And I think it was a lack of awareness to understanding the child. And everyone was pigeonholed. And a lot of people are saying, but there's more autism than ever. No, I think it's the fact that we're better educated and we better understand it. There's better specialists now who are able to support diagnosis, and there's people reaching out probably a little bit more. So I think that's why we've probably seen a change.
Oh, 100%. You know, you've got the tools to diagnose now where, you know, however many years ago, it just wasn't there. Like you said, there wasn't the knowledge or possibly the willingness at some point to diagnose. And I think that's exactly why, isn't it? And it literally makes my blood boil when I see things, especially on social media, people going, oh, it wasn't like this in my day, overdiagnosis. And, you know, there was a politician recently, wasn't there? Was it? I can't remember which party it was, probably Reform, saying about this whole thing about people wearing ear defenders in classrooms is ridiculous, and, you know, basically laying into send families saying that they were causing a problem. And I'm like, oh my God. And that's what makes me think, are we moving on?
Yeah, it's just narrow-minded, uneducated comments like that.
Yeah.
For you and I, no, that's totally not correct. And again, where social media has the power to spread awareness, it also has the power to send out the wrong message.
100%.
So you've got to be careful who you're listening to, unfortunately.
So you mentioned it was Violet's birthday recently. Did that look any different to how you would celebrate your other children's birthdays?
No, because how we celebrate our other children's birthdays is we tailor to what they enjoy. So we tailor to what Violet enjoyed. She had cake for breakfast.
Love that for her.
she enjoyed it. We knew as soon as she seen it, big smile on her face, cake for breakfast. Went into school really happy. And then we did, she's quite good. We blew out the candles. We done the cake. We give the presents. Now with the presents, Violet never showed any intention to unwrap anything. But this year she started unwrapping it herself, and her sisters and her brother were trying to help her. And we were like, no, she's looking like she wants to do this on her own. So you can see the progression side in it on that side. And then she'll pick up and choose things at her leisure, Violet. Everything could be done on her terms. And we respect that, and we give her time to come round, and when she's ready, she'll pick up with it. So where the other children are a bit more wanting in terms of what can I have, or I want this, Violet's just happy to have something given to her that will probably play towards more of a sensory side for her.
It's nice that, isn't it? Because I think naturally children, especially young children, I'm not trying to offend your children here, by the way, but naturally I think birthdays and Christmases, they're like, what's next? What else have I got? Where it's lovely to have a child that isn't doing that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the kind of, is that all I've got?
I know.
But then I think back to when I was a kid and I was exactly the same.
Oh, everyone's the same.
And then I think, I know now why my mum struggled so hard to come up with gift ideas, because it's hard, especially today. The kids are, our kids are, and then you start talking. I never wanted to sound like my parents, but I've started talking to them. They've got everything. So it's then so difficult to get them toys, where Violet doesn't want anything. If Violet didn't get any toys, Violet wouldn't change. She'd just be the same Violet.
And what a lovely characteristic to have. Because I know my kids, if they didn't get any presents, they'd be absolutely furious. At the minute, Leo, he's just turned 3, and he's too young at the minute to understand Christmas. He's started to be able to say Happy Christmas. I don't think he knows what he's saying. He's just copying. And he's started to kind of understand the concept of presents, but now he thinks that everything is a present. So we had a speech and language appointment at home earlier, and she got some paper out to give me with, you know, like the suggestions of how to play and things like that. We're kind of at the very early stages of assessment. And he went straight over to her and went, oh, presents. So I think he just thinks anything new is a present. So I'm like, listen, if I can give you bits of paper for Christmas, I'll save myself a fortune until you understand.
Our bunny's just, she's starting to understand it, and she's starting to tell us what she wants, and she's 2 now. So I can see what you're going through.
Speaking of Violet's siblings, your eldest is 9 and then your youngest is 2. How much do they kind of understand about Violet's needs and how things need to be kind of a bit more tailored to her sometimes?
I think because Teddy, there's such a small gap between him and Violet. Minnie is 6, a couple of years younger, and then Bunny's 2. They've always lived with it. It's normal. It's normalised. So they're really good and really supportive with her. It's like going to school this morning, Minnie held Violet's hand to the car and put Violet in the car while I was dealing with other things going on in the house. So they're absolutely brilliant. And like I say, it's normalised because they've grew up with it. They don't know any different. It's not like a disability formed from an injury where it's been life-changing. And they've been able to have to adapt. It's just second nature to them, to be honest.
Have you ever had any interactions with other children that have been a bit funny? Because I remember ages ago, we were at Soft Play at Ninja Warrior, and a little girl came up to my husband. And I would say this is probably at a point where he was still struggling a little bit with the comparison with other children.
Right, okay.
So I don't think, and he wouldn't mind me saying this because he's quite open about it, I don't think he was thrilled to be at Soft Play purely because of that thing of, which I know is so many people will relate to, is seeing other children the same age doing things that your child can't do yet,
yeah,
or can't do or won't do, however that looks for you. And I remember him telling me that a little girl had come over and said, oh, how old is he, about Leo? I can't remember how old he was at the time, maybe like 18 months, where probably a typical child would have been walking. And she went, oh, I thought he was younger than that because he's not walking. Why isn't he walking? And I think now my husband would probably be all right with that, but it really upset him at the time. And I was wondering, have you had any kind of experience with other children? Just given that Violet obviously isn't able to verbally interact with other children that don't know her.
not something that springs to mind, but it's a case of, and I feel bad for doing this, it's a case of speaking to Teddy and Minnie, look after your sister, make sure she's all right. So they go round like a little pair of bouncers then, looking after her, looking out for her. And I think it's Violet keeps herself to herself, so she doesn't have that interaction. And we haven't really been in that situation. Olivia maybe, and hasn't probably told me, so I'm not too worried about it. But then we'll go to places that tailor more towards Violet's needs. And the other kids are, like I say, they're absolutely brilliant. They're on board with it, they're supportive. So we'll go to different soft plays that cater for children with additional needs. But yeah, not where a child's being a bit cold or callous, but I know they can be. And that's one of the reasons it was so important to get Violet in the right school setting. Because I know how cold children can be. A lot of the time, they don't really mean it. They don't really understand. They don't understand the person. So ensuring when she went into school, she was put in the right school. It was massively essential. It was one of our desires. And we actually had to go legal to get it in the right school setting because the local authority were trying to push her more towards a mainstream school with a bit of a hub attached. And it just wasn't the right setting for Violet. We knew she needed a specialist school who understood her needs and could cater for everything.
It upsets me hearing you say that because it's unfortunately that is the norm, isn't it? Like, you aren't the exception to the rule in having a really tough time getting the right setting. I've spoken to so many people who've either had to take their LA to court or they've had to go private to get the right thing on the EHCP. There's just so many issues. And, it, you know, obviously it comes down to funding, but it shouldn't be that hard. And I think sometimes when I've heard stories, and yours is a good example, where it's obvious that mainstream isn't going to be the right setting. So then why are you having to fight for it?
Yeah, I think it, from my personal opinion, I think it probably comes down to funding and places.
Yeah.
A lot of schools, there's not a magnitude of massive amounts of spaces and specialist schools in the city. A lot of people travel from quite far and wide to get into the school Violet's at. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out that you put someone in a mainstream school, they're probably going to disrupt the rest of the class and they're certainly going to regress. You're not going to see the best form of education for them and you're not going to see any development, in my opinion. So yeah, massively important she was in the right settings.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm glad that although it sounds like it was a difficult process, she is in the right setting now. And obviously you're really happy with where she is.
Yeah, it was a massive fight on our hands. It was a couple of days before we were going to the tribunal that we received a diagnosis, and then we received the confirmation via the school, and the local authority was still telling us, no, she hasn't got a placement. She'll get a placement if we tell you. Right now she's going to, I won't mention the school she was going to. And I went to the setting, the school, and we were walked around by the deputy head teacher. And during the visit, there was children in the school put marbles in the mouth. And I thought, I pointed it out. I said, he's going to choke to death there. Oh, and there was a big panic then, and they saw it. And then he done the same again. And me and Olivia looked at each other and went, with Violet susceptible to putting things she should in her mouth anyway, it'd be a recipe for disaster. So yeah, we fought long and hard. We had the support from our occupational therapist, speech and language therapist, and then we achieved the results. And I think, and I feel sorry saying this, but you've got to stand up for yourself. You've got to shout for your own rights, and you've got to be strong with it. You can't fold over and roll over, because they will be ushered into potentially a school that isn't the best fit for them. And then it's an even bigger fight getting them out into the right setting.
I know, it makes me nervous, this. I think one of the things that's lovely about doing this podcast is I feel like I get educated every week by whoever it is I speak to. And whether that's on learning about a disability that I hadn't heard of before, or understanding more about a challenge that a child faces or what a family is going through. But one thing that I kind of wish I didn't know is how hard this school process is, because we will be coming up to this. And I've mentioned it to my husband a couple of times and he's like, oh no, you're like hearing the worst of the worst though. And I was like, no, no, I actually don't think I am. I think I'm just hearing what it's like, unfortunately. And sometimes you can know too much, can't you?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah, I think the key is applying early, getting things in place, getting everything structured, getting all your reports, your documents in place, getting your EAT in place, making sure you've got your diagnosis in place. And it's easy for me to say that, but it wasn't easy at the time. But I suppose if you're organised, you've got everything in place, and you've got a will and a desire to get the children in the right setting, it can happen.
Yeah, we're about to start by the time this episode goes out, Leo will have just started preschool. And at the minute for us, it's unclear whether he will be able to go to mainstream. My thinking is that he will, certainly for primary, because I know that a lot of children go to mainstream primary. And then when it gets to high school, obviously, it ramps up for any child, yeah, doesn't it? And I know, yeah, that might change then. But until he's just between myself and a childminder who only has him. So at the minute, he hasn't been in that setting. So I've got no idea how he will get on in a setting with other children where they're being told to do certain things at certain times and I'm not there. He'll be fine without me. He's not bothered. It's me that'd be crying. But I think, yeah, we're at the very beginning of that process and about to start with the EHCP. So I suppose knowledge is power. As well as I'm worried about it, knowing other people's experiences is going to be helpful. And like what you've said there, so many other people have said the same thing. Be organised, have everything ready to go. Make sure you've got all the reports together.
Knowing your child, you'll just know the setting's right for them. Just like you know it's not right for them. So when you go and visit that school, you'll go, he'd love that, he'll thrive with that. And then the teacher will tell you about potentially our typical day looks and you'll go, yeah, he'll be fine with that. And then it sort of alleviates some of your fears then. With us, we went round, and I only went to one school with Olivia. I was working, so she went round. And Olivia, like I say, she's the expert with everything, and she just had a feel for a couple of schools. And they were the ones we fought for, and we got in one of them, luckily enough. It's just an intuition you have. You'll just know it's the right place for them.
Yeah, I think the preschool feels like it's lovely and it's right by our house, which is also nice. But I think, and I guess you will have experienced this with a nursery setting when Violet was younger. Leo is talking and he can tell you what he wants, but he's not at that conversational level yet. So I can't ask him what he's done today. And I can prompt him because I'll ask him, who did we see this morning or where did we go? And he can't have that level of conversation. So I think for me, I'm like, he's not going to be able to tell me what he's done. He's not going to be able to tell me whether he's had a nice day or not.
I've got a 9-year-old who won't tell me what he's done.
So. Well, yeah, I've been there too, to be fair.
It's all guesswork. You just... But if it's the right setting, they'll tell you what he's done and then they'll advise.
Yeah.
And the schools are totally different from when I went. Now, they have, well, in Sefton, they have something called Dojo, which is an app which they update about the children, the class, and what they've been doing. So it's totally different.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I know that they're going to use that at Leo's preschool, so that's nice. You're saying about your 9-year-olds just reminded me, though, my eldest, when he was about 13, went through a phase. I'd pick him up from school and he'd get in the car and he'd just go, what's for tea? And I was like, I actually had to say to him in the end, you have to say hello to me before you can ask what's for tea. Like, this isn't okay. And he took it very literally. So he'd open the car door and go, hi, Mum, what's for tea? And that was it. No information about the day. No, how was he's much better now, but it was just, hi, what's for tea?
Yeah.
Priorities.
Like that.
I would love you to tell me about through different eyes. Like, what is it and what made it so important for you to set this up?
So it's a business we set up. So we've always, well, I've always wanted to have my own business, run my own business, and never more so than when I've had children. Through Different Eyes is a footwear fashion brand that we've produced. I'm massively into my clothes, especially my trainees, and I'm quite artistic. I can draw and design a little bit. So I've come up with the idea, okay, let's look at the market. And there's a lot of people in Liverpool doing clothes, doing fashionable clothes, gym clothes, whatever it may be. And I thought there's a bit of a gap in the market for trainees. And they, for me, any outfit that you're going out in, your trainees have got to sort of be on point. So I started designing and then I started reaching out. But the main core reason we wanted to produce the company was to give our children an opportunity when they left school. Now, I think, don't quote me on this, I think it's 16% statistically autistic people go are in paid employment, full-time Wow. paid employment, which is a really low statistic. And we wanted to be able to change that immediately for Violet, but also for others, because everyone's got a worth and everyone deserves to be independent. And if I'm going to give Violet the best shot of independent, then, as you know, having a job and being able to earn your own money is something that's massively important to us. Whether Violet gets there or not, I'm not too sure at this stage, but we've got to give her that opportunity. So we produce the company. We deal a lot with Portugal. They produce and manufacture our trainees, and then we've created the website. We just sell them as an e-commerce, through an e-commerce website. And we're also got some in Transalpino. I hope he doesn't mind, but the owner of that has a grandchild with autism. I was actually at a footwear called Laces Out. It's a footwear exhibition event, sells different trainees. And we had one of the stalls there, and I got speaking to him, and he related to the story, and he wanted to help and support. So he's been quite supportive in allowing us to stock our trainees in his shop. So, yeah, fair play to him. And that's what we're trying to do, create something for our kids, and then hopefully for people who aren't given opportunities, we can bring them in as the business expands.
I love that. It's such a nice idea. And I think that story with Transalpino is just a really lovely example of how opening up and sharing your story can bring people together like that, isn't it?
Yeah, massively. I mean, when you have something you can relate and they could relate to our story and then to offer support, it's just massive, massive for us, massive for the family. I'm really grateful, to be honest.
So if you're in or near Liverpool, Transalpino is a stockist. What's the website for people who aren't near here?
It's called throughdifferenteyes.co.uk. And our Instagram is through_different_eyes_. And that can send you a link into the website as well.
I'll make sure that all of those links and stuff are in the show notes as well, because I know that some people listen to this while they're driving or doing other things and aren't able to kind of write stuff down or remember it. So that'll all be in the show notes. I just wanted to ask, have you seen Standout Socks?
Yes, is that the ones you went on the Dragon's Den?
Yeah, it is. And it's sounds very similar to what, not the actual product or the brand, but the idea sounds very similar. Yeah. Because it's a guy called Christian who actually I'm hoping to get on the podcast over the next couple of weeks, because it was him. He set it up with his brother, because his brother has Down syndrome, and it's very similar, very similar to you in terms of they want to offer paid employment to people with disabilities. And I'm hoping to speak to him from a sibling point of view about how it was growing up with a sibling with Down syndrome. And I think actually what you said about Violet's siblings, your other children, I think some people can be a little nervous or fearful of what a disability or a difference or an additional need can mean for a child's siblings. But I actually think that it's providing them with a beautiful understanding of how to care for somebody and how people differ. Like you were saying that your other children really help her, and you know, like them being little security guards when they go around. Like, what a beautiful lesson for your other children to learn so young.
Yeah, they're educated in the disability, and people fear the unknown. And when someone looks a little bit different or acts a little bit different, there's a fear from it. So what you see is some of the comments that come out, it's generally through fear and lack of understanding and knowing the person. I think we are where we are. We've got the children we've got. We wouldn't change them for the world. And we're also, with having other kids, it gives them a massive education on people are different. People aren't always the same, whether you're disabled or not. People are different.
I always finish each episode in the same way with the same two questions. And the first question is, what's the best piece of advice that you've been given along the way?
I think an understanding of Violet needs to be regulated to learn. So what I mean by that is Violet's very, very sensory seeking a lot of the time. And if she doesn't get a sensory fix, she won't be regulated. And if she's not regulated, she can't learn. So if you have a day where she's not regulated, it's absolute chaotic. There can be massive meltdowns and breakdowns by Violet, really emotional. But if you get her regulated and doing certain strategies and putting things in place, she can then learn. So that's probably one of them. And then just to pinch another one was making sure the EHCP is in place so she's got that support, that legal support. It's okay getting a school to say, yeah, we can do this, that and the other, but you don't know if it's actually been done. If you've got a legal document that says they have to do it, it more favours yourself.
And my final question is, what do you know now that you wish you'd known when you got Violet's diagnosis?
I think the diagnosis, for me, it's a bit of a label to categorise how Violet is, but it's not a restriction. It doesn't restrict anything. We'll just carry on doing what we'd have done without it. So there's no restrictions in place. We'll just carry on. We'll put strategies. We'll always strive towards the best, the right settings for Violet. If different things come onto the market or different experts suggest different things, we'll try them. Quite free-spirited in that. There's a lot of people trying to do deep cleanses and different things, which if they work, brilliant. If not, then we'll just keep striving to ensure she aims towards that independence.
I love that. What a beautiful way to finish the episode. Paul, thank you so much. Like I said, I'll put all of the links for Through Different Eyes in the show notes so everyone can find you. And thank you so much for joining me.
No, thanks a lot for having me.
I really enjoyed that chat with Paul. I think it's nice to get a different perspective on things sometimes. So a man's perspective, obviously, in this case, or a dad's perspective, should I say. So the podcast is going to predominantly be me talking to women because it is called the Send Mum Club. But I do think it's nice to mix it up sometimes. And I really liked Paul's whole viewpoint, actually, on Violet's diagnosis. And I love what he's doing with the brand that they've set up. So like I said, all of the ways to find Through Different Eyes will be in the show notes if you want to have a look, and I hope that it goes incredibly well for them. So if you did enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed making it, then I would love it if you would rate, subscribe, review, however it works on your podcast app, because it helps more people to find the Send Mom Club, which ultimately is the goal. So thank you so much for listening, and I will see you back here with another fabulous guest next week.